time now to go to Sunday school with the professor.
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you?
Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lorenz.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helfer.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Good answer. Like the way you think.
KNBR 680, the sports leader.
That makes me laugh every Sunday. We only got one more Sunday. I'm going to miss it over the winter. I will tell you that.
Well, I'll get it on my phone for you, and I will send it to you
Very
when
good.
I give you a call. How's that?
That'll be my, that'll be what they, Carmen, what do they call it? Is that a ringtone?
Yeah, I can make you a ringtone.
Would you?
Yeah.
All right.
Go.
Very good. I like it. It's a riot. I think it's the best thing going. How are you this morning?
I'm great. It feels good to win a couple games and look forward to today, you know, try to get this three in a row.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny, and we look back on this season, and I know, look, last year 64-98, right now 70-79, it sounds a lot better just at the numbers, but this is a team, and the stat was thrown out there yesterday, I think 103 games decided by three runs or less. So, you know, you say, where was that one hit when we needed it? Because the pitching, and I maybe even want to comment on Kurt Young this year, what he's done. But you guys have been in it the whole way, and it just needed that one hit here and there.
Yeah, well, it's typical Giant baseball. I mean, really, this is how we've won. And this year we haven't been able to win the majority of the close games. And, you know, when you have injuries or you have any weaknesses, especially the injuries, the holes that those create, your game, you know, the 25-man roster is very important, and through the course of the year, it could cost you games if you don't have that in the middle relief, or you don't get that key hit, or you don't make that play. So that's what shows up, and I think it shows up in this ballpark a lot more than it does, you know, let's say Arizona or Colorado or some of these other band boxes, you know, where and even New York, they hit the ball down the right field line, it's a home run. You have to play good fundamental baseball here with athletes on the field. And this year, we've always been good in the past. It went in a close game. And this year, they didn't go our way. We weren't able to get the job done, and thus, you know, part of the reason for the record.
Yeah, but still at home, the team at home, as I look at the thing, right, at 41-33 at home. So you got this one, obviously, and then you got San Diego and the Dodgers coming in. 41-33, not the end of the world. You guys have actually played well at home, and I want to segue into Kurt Young. We do this stat every weekend, and it's unbelievable, but this ball club has had the best ERA of pitching in the major leagues, other than maybe the Dodgers or Astros, by 0.02 of a point. So 3.36 to 3.38 since June 1st.
Well, that's fantastic because, you know, Kurt and Matt Hergis, they've done a wonderful job for us. You know, the proof is in the pudding there with the stats, and it goes to the close games. I mean, you don't play close games without good pitching, right? You just don't, you know, pound the ball back and forth. And as you said, we have played better at home. You know, our pitching's been so good, and he's given us a chance to win those games. And maybe the lack of power a little bit on the road is hurt us. But Kurt's done a great job. If you look at the rotation and all the people that we had lost, you know, Johnny Cueto, Samardzija has been non-existent. Bum was hurt. The list goes on and on. How about the resurgence of Chris Stratton? You know, had some hiccups, started off really good, went down, worked on some things. These guys put their heads together as a group and had him go work on a few things and come back, and he threw his best game of his career just 2 days ago. But they do a good job, and I've enjoyed working with him, you know, just not on the pitching side. He's engaged with the defense and you know, good conversation back and forth on the positioning and trying to help each other out. So that's a wonderful stat. I didn't realize it was that good.
Yes.
And you look at Rodriguez and Suarez and the job he's done with those young pitchers. It's been great.
How about Holland?
Yeah,
now,
well,
do you remember Kurt as a pitcher? Well, do you remember?
Well, we played against each other in Tacoma, and you know, I didn't know him very well. I just seen him out on the mound. I remember the name. I remember watching him pitch. I can't remember facing him, per se. So it's limited. It's a limited memory of him as a player.
Well, he reminds me of Holland. Reminds me of Kurt, and I think Kurt sort of molded him a little bit because Holland now the changeup. He changes speed so well, and he's had a tremendous season. That's the way Kurt used to pitch.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it shows, and Derek Holland, you mentioned him. What a job he's done. Here's a guy that signed on as a fifth starter, and, you know, he's pretty much been the mainstay. Yeah. He hasn't been hurt. He showed up every fifth day, and when we were really, really good, you know, that pitching staff was intact, right? Kane and Lincecum, we didn't have the injuries. These guys showed up, and Derek Holland's been the one guy that is taking the ball every fifth day and pitched extremely well. We were in every game. I can't remember a game that we were out of when he took the mound. And what impresses me about him is, you know, he's basically a fastball pitcher. He does use his off-speed pitches, but he pitches inside to right-handers extremely well. He lives on an inside corner with these guys, and he doesn't give the hitters a chance to extend their arms. And, you know, it's been a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, you've always said that over the years, that you got to get the ball in. You got to get the ball in.
Well, it's very easy to hit when, you know, you just use one side of the plate. And, you know, down and away is great, but if you don't use both sides of the plate, it's easier to hit. You just eliminate one side, and whether it's a fastball or a changeup or breaking ball, you look on one side of the plate, and I think it makes it easier for a hitter. But when you can use both sides of the plate, and he does it extremely well, he gets them thinking in so much when he goes away, they don't have the same swing on the ball.
Boy, last night, Giants win 3-0. Bumgarner pitched an excellent game last night. A little tweak, and they took him out, and who knows if they shut him down or not. Whenever you start dealing with the side issues,
right,
you don't want any trouble. But the umpires gave a warning last night, and are they sensitive to Bumgarner now? Because, you know, every time you turn around, he's got a little something going. Because, I don't know, how do the umpires know? One pitch inside and all of a sudden a warning?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Are they looking at Bumgarner? And I'm not quite sure it's that, but you don't know what goes through an individual umpire's mind. Maybe Ramon, the home plate umpire, had seen him get into it with players, and maybe that is in the back of his head that this guy can, you know, will throw inside and hit somebody. Not that he's done a whole lot of it,
right,
but he's had his moments with Puig, etc. I don't believe that's the case. I think it's more the umpire's experience of knowing the game and having a feel for when the pitcher is trying to hit somebody. And in this case last night, I think it was an overreaction.
Yeah.
I know Bum respects some of those players on the other side, and guys like Arenado and LeMahieu, they play the game right. They play the game hard. LeMahieu doesn't say anything to anybody. He just goes about his business. And I know he was not trying to hit him. And it was probably an overreaction of an umpire just being in the moment and saying, hey, I'm going to take charge of this and not let this get out of hand.
Yeah, I see that a lot. I see that going on. And I think Eddie Montague told us sometimes when there has been an incident, not necessarily between that team, but a pitcher, they'll have a meeting beforehand, right? They'll come in and, right, they'll tell Boach and stuff, you know, we're on this, right?
Yeah, they're fully aware of it. You know, not only if there was a fight, but any bad blood or a guy's gotten hit, even if there were no warnings, they will get alerts to say, hey, keep an eye open for this. And we haven't had any history with the Colorado Rockies or with either of, you know, LeMahieu or any of their players. And honestly, I think it was just the umpire reacting and trying to take charge of the game and not wanting to get out of hand. But, you know, another umpire, maybe a veteran umpire, wouldn't have batted an eye, and that there wouldn't have been any warnings.
No, Eddie Montague would have ripped the mask off. He would have started punching people. You know.
Well, it'd take a lot to get Eddie upset, and I don't think that one scenario would have been the place where he was going to give out warnings.
You know, it's funny. We love Eddie. You know that, and he's the best. And I love talking ball with him. But you were there when he umpired. What was he like as an umpire?
You know, he was a great guy to talk to. He was very personable. But when you got on his wrong side, or you took it too far, he could have that dark side to him, you know, because he wanted to keep control of the game. I mean, he was very common sense type guy and a guy you could talk to, as I said. But if you gave him a lot of gruff and he felt it was unwarranted, he wasn't going to listen to any of it. And that's when he would, you know, take control of the game and take control of his umpiring.
I love it. I love talking to him. Don't you? Love talking to him.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's great. He's helped me a lot over the years now that he's, you know, working for the umpires. I text him when I'm not sure on a rule or I don't agree with the outcome. You know, how do they rule it this way or why did the umpire do this? And I've asked him many, many times, and he's always been great getting back and explaining the rule from his perspective.
Yeah, great ambassador of the game.
Yes, he is.
Just terrific. And his dad signed Willie Mays. Come on, how about that?
That's amazing. You know, and he's obviously a fan favorite and a favorite of us around here because he lives here. He's from here, and we see him at the ballpark a lot. So it's great that he's still involved with umpiring.
Did you know he sold hot dogs at Candlestick?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, just ask him. He still has the whole call.
Really?
You know, get your red hot mustard. You know, he'll give it to you right now.
No kidding.
I love it. Very good.
Maybe he can sell me a hot dog next time I see him.
Not a Dodger dog, but a hot dog. All right. Tom Hallion is an interesting umpire, and we had that question on the podcast this week. Umpires kind of acting a little bit, you know, the Dutch Rennert, you know, with the call.
Yeah.
Hallion, he swings around and punches you out. Yeah. And he got into it the other day. Todd Frazier hit a home run, and it was a walk-off. And Hallion stood on home plate before Frazier could get there. He was like in the middle of the celebration for some reason, and I don't know why. But my question to you is this: umpires acting a little bit, becoming a little bit more theatrical. What do you think about it? Specifically, Hallion, a guy like that.
Well, I think that it's a sign of the times with the game. I mean, look at these umpires. They get a lot of grief out there, and they're trying to bring some color to the game. I think when they have some personality, it's good for the game. And, you know, I know Tommy very well. He's been in the league an awful long time, and he's actually one of the umpires that has thrown me out.
Really?
I got ejected from Tom Hallion.
What happened?
And I think it was the Vogel. No, that was, I can't remember the instance now that we're talking about it, but I've been thrown out twice, and Hallion was one time, and it was a Vogel song, Close Pitches. That I was yelling from the dugout. I thought he had some strikes, but that wasn't Tom. I can't remember the incident with Tom, but nonetheless, you know, he is a colorful guy. I talk to the umpires down at third base, and they all love him, his crew, because, you know, every day there's a different umpire at third base, and they talk about Tom. He's the senior umpire, and he leads those guys. He has fun with them, and maybe it was something with Todd Frazier. Maybe they have a close relationship that he wanted to stand on home plate. I'm not sure. I mean, we don't want this thing to get out of hand, but, you know, I think it's probably a harmless thing that he did, knowing the person.
Yeah, Frazier sort of did the hidden ball trick a couple of weeks before on the umpires, where he went in the stands and dropped the foul ball, and a fan had a rubber ball, put it in his glove. Frazier picked up the glove, squeezed it, and the umpire called an out. And before they could check for the ball, he threw it in the stand. So maybe Hallion, you know, has got it for Frazier.
Maybe. I mean, that is amazing. I didn't see when that happened that you tell
pretty
that
good
story about the foul ball. It's hard to believe in this day and age with the video and everything that goes on that they didn't catch that one. Only in New York.
I loved it. It was great. Very good. Hey, but what about his strike? And Eddie Montague says, you got to sell the strike. You got to sell the third strike. You know, you got to make sure it's clear. And Hallion, if fans don't know, he does a twist, a full twist, and then like a punch, right, or something like that.
Yeah, he turns sideways and he rips both arms, and he you know, he shakes when he does it. I mean, it's really violent. I don't know how he can do that thing all these years every day. I mean, every fourth day behind the plate, but you know, it adds a little color to the game. I think the fans, you know, when you're up in the nosebleeds and you can't see, you don't hear. You like to see that visual. So, and the other thing is, he's working extremely hard. You know, I mean, it takes a lot of energy, really, in your job to have that approach. So, you know, they're theatrical, right? They're out there. The fans are watching. They want it to be a great experience. And there's some benefits to doing what he does. Now, the one guy that comes to mind when you talk about theatrical strike threes was Dutch Renner. Remember Dutch?
Of course.
And I remember he was near the end of his career when I was, you know, a young player in the league. And he'd give that strike one, and he'd drag it out, and he'd sit, he'd stand up and stick that arm out. I mean, it was like Tom Hallion, that it was a lot of effort behind just his strike call, not strike three, but just his strike call. And I respect that, because it does take a lot of energy and hard work to do that every fourth day in the big leagues.
Oh, good perspective on it. Yeah. Our third base coach, Ron Woods, good perspective. I like it. I like, as long as the umpire makes the call, it's a correct call, I like it. I don't think they have to be, you know, invisible. I think it's part of the game.
Yeah, well, everybody loved to talk about Ken Kaiser back in the day, right?
Very good. When he used to, over
there at first base when he'd shoot people down and he got into it. But you're right. If the umpire is a good umpire, I think they can get away with it, and it really adds to the game. If they're missing a lot of calls or they're not doing well, then it becomes an issue, just like anybody on the field, you know?
Yeah, Dwayne played with when Ron Lucy Luciano umpired. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, yeah.
A wrestler. And he would jump up and down, and his arms would go all different directions. I don't think he was a great umpire. I think that was the problem. But Ken Kaiser was another wrestler.
Yeah.
And he'd make the out call at first. He would barely move his arm.
Yeah.
Remember, you didn't know what he called. He was like, his arm would flinch.
Yeah.
That was his out call at first base.
Yeah. I didn't see him a whole lot, but I remember watching videos. Was it This Week in Baseball, right?
We had
the one show once a week. You sit down and you watch that, and he'd show up on there once in a while for some reason or another.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Carmen and Allie, I'm going to let you weigh in on this because we did it on our podcast. You like Carmen? You like the umpire acting a little bit?
It's all right. Like, I'm not crazy about it. I kind of think, like, if you don't get noticed as an umpire, you're a really good umpire.
Oh, a good perspective, yeah.
But, you know, do what you want. Live your life.
Okay.
Yeah, I like certain circumstances. I mean, it's kind of, we're talking on the podcast that you can't pick and choose your moments because you're just trying to be an unbiased umpire. But I think it adds to the game a little bit. I think it's fun. I just don't need to see it every single at bat kind of a thing. I think it's just, you know, special occasions or something like that.
2-2, Will. 2-2, you.
2-2. Well, I know when I played, and I was rung up by an umpire when he went through all these gyrations and strike three. You took it a little personal, you know. You'd rather somebody just say strike three and, you know, not make a big deal of it when they make it too big of a production. But I do have respect, as I said, because the umpires, you know, it's a visual game for the people in the seats.
Yeah.
And it does take a lot of energy, and they're putting everything into their job.
All right, jumping ahead here. You know, we do a greatest game in Giants franchise history every Sunday, and Raf does a really good job of putting it together. And we pick one from 2014. It was early in the season. And Brandon Hicks, well, hits a home run in this game. It's 7-4 in 10 innings. Romo gives up a homer to Manny Ramirez to tie it up in the ninth, and the Giants win it in the 10th in L.A., 51,000 early in May, and you get into a nice winning streak after that. But Brandon Hicks hits a tremendous home run in this game, and I forgot about him. I had to look it up. He had 8 home runs in April and May.
Yeah.
Never hit another one.
Right.
But come on, how about that?
Yeah, you know what? He came onto the scene as a non-roster invitee into spring training and had a great spring training. There was a couple things he did. He had very good power. He could hit the home run. And the other thing was he turned a double play as good as anybody in baseball. He really was outstanding at turning the double play with a strong arm to boot. And remember when he came up, he had that run, as you're saying, and I said, wow, this guy is better than we expected. And I liken it to the run that Randy Wynn had when he got traded over here from Tampa Bay. He went off hitting balls into the cove or right and left. I don't know how many it was. And Brandon was that player for us. He played great second base. He hit those home runs. And then all of a sudden, a little bit Dan Uggla-esque.
Yeah.
He lost it. And, you know, Uggla did it for years and years and years. It's not fair to say he lost it. But Dan, when he got older, he was, and even when he was in his prime, he was, you know, he struck out a lot, but he hit a lot of homers. And that was type of player that Brandon Hicks was.
Yeah, so I forgot about him. So I'm glad sometimes we, and it's only 2014. It's not that far, you know, back.
Yeah, well, we've been through some players here, Marty.
No kidding.
And you know, I don't easily recall all these guys, but you bring up some of these names and it brings a smile to my face because he was a real pro. I really enjoyed having him on the club and working with him, and he was a great guy to have on the team. It's a shame that he couldn't find that magic a little bit longer for himself.
Yeah, 8 home runs in April and May.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Of course, an important year for the Giants. The 2014 team was celebrated a little bit yesterday. Ishikawa was here. Hudson was here. We had him on the show. Maybe some of your thoughts about Ishikawa, because he had a couple of different stints with the Giants and then the famous home run. And, you know, and plus he's out there in the ninth inning.
Right.
You know, and he, you know, you made him a left fielder.
Yeah.
How about that?
Well, when he first came up, I remember I liked everything I saw about him. He was a smooth fielding first baseman. Yes. He really was. He had great hands over there. He knew what he was doing. So he was a real plus as a defender. And he made himself into a pretty good hitter. But as you said, he went to Pittsburgh. He started bouncing around. And, you know, the word perseverance really comes to mind when you think about Travis Ishikawa. And then to come back in 2014 and do what he did for us, you know, obviously the big home run, but he was a big part of that team, just not at first base, but he was our best bat. He was our best guy, and we had to get him in a lineup, and we put him in left field, and he did an admirable job in left field, and he started in the World Series out there. And, you know, that just shows you that you can't quit on this game, and sometimes, you know, learning other positions just to get in the lineup is a positive thing. Now, he didn't go all around the field, but he was a first baseman, left fielder. And, yeah, it was great to see him, and we just love, I don't know about the fans, but myself, when they put those things on the big board during the game, you know, I stop and look, and it's just great memories.
Yeah, Hudson was the other one, what he did, and 222 major league wins, maybe not a Hall of Famer, but 222 for him with his stature and his ability. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, you know, when he came over to us, you know, we always had to go through Atlanta to win baseball games or to win in the playoff, and he was a big part of that. Obviously, earlier with the A's, I didn't see him as much when he was, you know, first starting off and all those great years he had. But he went over to Atlanta. Whenever he was on the mound, you knew it was going to be a tough battle because he was just a pro. He knew what he was doing. He had that sinker, and when that sinker was going, he kept it down in his own. You weren't scoring a lot of runs, and you always had a lot of respect for Tim Hudson across the field because of who he was and what he did. And of course, when he came here, he just added to it. Great teammate. Everybody was so happy for him when we won the World Series. And one moment stands out to me is the honor that they gave him. I think it was in 14, near the end of the year, everybody wore on the plane the bald caps. Okay, they all had ball caps on the plane, and that was quite a sight. You know, they dress up the rookies and all that, but to have everybody on the flight in bald caps and it was like a tan polo shirt. Everybody looked identical. It was a great honor to him.
Yeah, that's good. That's a great example of how beloved he was by his teammates. You know, he started game 7 of the World Series. And I realized he was out early, and you guys got him out at the right time, and then I fell to the big boy, and that was the end of the story.
Right.
But he's so funny. I said, well, what was it like getting up that morning? And he's joking, right, with Kim, his wife. He says, Kim, I just had a dream. I'm going to start game 7 of the World Series. You know, so, you know, he was already in the mood of lightening up. He told me, and I didn't know it. I guess I forgot. He's the oldest pitcher ever to start a Game 7 of a World Series.
I did not know that. Well, there you go. Well deserved. I'm glad it happened to him. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, again, we wouldn't have won that World Series without him. And what a great man.
You know, just to take this one step further on the 2010, 12, and 14 teams, you had great players. And you had, you know, you had the core youth people that we're looking at today in baseball. You know, the Sotos and the Bryants and all those kind of people. Those are the ones you had. But you had guys who won. They won. They figured out how to win.
Yeah.
When you look back at some of the names, you say, Ishikawa, well, you know, nice player and he had a big hit, but, you know, you're not going to spend $2 million to bring him in.
Right.
You know what I mean? You had players who could win.
Right. Well, we did, and I think that was, you know, we've always looked at it. I know I did, thinking about, you know, out of spring training, the guys you want, and when they make recommendations, you like this guy, like that guy. We always wanted players that have won in the past because they understand what it's like to win and how important it is to go about your job in a particular way. They know what it's like, and their expectation is to win. And then we sprinkled in a lot of other younger players, journeymen, guys that, knew how to win too, were good players, but maybe they haven't won. But, you know, it's just a good blend. You got to have that blend. And if you can get a little youth in there and energy, but we certainly did a good job. The front office, we had the right people. I mean, look, it shows what we did, 3 World Series. Those players on the team, you don't win a World Series if you don't have the right people on the field. And in all 3 of those years, we had some tremendous individuals and players on the field.
Yeah, which leads me to this, and then we'll take a break. Here we are, 2 weeks to go. 2 weeks from today, it's all over. That's the last game. And there's 14 games to go, and their team's still in it, just like you guys were in it, fighting to get to the end. This is a marathon, and it's like an all-out war. You know, you're elbowing people, you're tripping people, you're doing whatever you can to get to the end of this marathon, and you did it with the teams, and we're watching it now. We're watching the Dodgers and Colorado go at it, St. Louis, Milwaukee, the Cubs, Atlanta, the A's involved, the Yankees. I think this part of the year of baseball is unbelievable.
Yeah, it definitely is. You think about when we started, you know, Valentine's Day, February 14th. You know, you go down to spring training, and it really boils down to these last 2 weeks. Now, every point of the season is important. The beginning, you have to win games. Yeah. But right now, if you're in it, you can make a name for yourself. You get hot, you execute now. That's where, you know, history is made with certain players. Look, we'll never forget Ishikawa's home run.
Right.
You never forget the Jonathan Sanchez performance against the Padres on the last day of the season to put us into the playoffs. So, unfortunately, we're not one of those teams this year. But, you know, the Rockies, Arizona, the Dodgers, to mention people in our division, they're going through that. And, it's much better to play games that matter that don't. And for us right now, it's actually nice, not that we're trying to ruin anybody's season, but if we play games against contenders that have a chance to go to the playoffs, it raises your motivation to win that game. And you know what? Any reason to win a game is important. I mean, we want to win every game we play, but it's nice to play these contending teams because, you know, out of respect to the game and how you're supposed to go about it, we want to win these games as bad as anything. So,
it's showing.
Yeah.
It's showing the last 2 nights, obviously. Lose 11 in a row, you could easily pack it up.
Yeah.
But these last 2 nights have been terrific, and today is a good game, Sensatella. And you get him against Eric Rodriguez, then it's off to San Diego, and then you go into St. Louis, and they're getting pasted by the Dodgers. Puig hit 3 homers yesterday. And
he's hot.
Come on, that's going on. Then you get the Dodgers here the last weekend, and we know what that's going to mean.
Right.
Because you can say goodbye to the Dodgers the last weekend. That's what's going to happen.
We see
that coming.
Yeah, we want to win the rest of our games.
Yes.
We'll put it like that.
Yeah, we see that coming very much. All right, we'll take a break. Well, Carmen's got a question for you. It's going to be interesting, and it's about ghosts in Milwaukee. We did a whole show on this last week.
Ghosts in
Milwaukee. All right, we'll take a break with Ron Wotus right after this. All right, nice to have you back with us. We've got baseball today, a gorgeous day out here at AT&T Park. Giants have won 2 in a row, and they go to sweep the Rockies today and make life miserable for them. But the lore of baseball, the talk of baseball, and Milwaukee is one of those places. Well, we had a lot of fun with it last weekend, and Carmen really did a lot of research into this, and I know Carmen's got a real question for you today.
Okay.
I want to talk about ghosts, like I've been talking about for the last week. I know that you guys went to Milwaukee. You stayed in a hotel that is famous for paranormal activity, especially with, I think, baseball teams. Bryce Harper has mentioned things, other players as well. Did you notice anything strange happening there? Has anything been reported from the team?
Well, Glad you asked that question, Carmen. I've been going there for 21 years, and, you know, there's two towers. There's the old tower, and there's a new tower, which the rooms are more modern and nice. And we've always stayed in the old section. I think in 21 years, I probably stayed in the new tower three times, and this time I was in the new tower. Now, I can say that the conversation was happening. Some coaches said they had handprints on their wall, and they went back. They disappeared. The same coach in his room, he came back to the room.
Can we reveal who this is?
Well, it was Alonzo Powell.
Very good. Okay, go ahead.
And he came back to his room. He showed me a picture. Every drawer was open when he came back to his room. Now, myself, I laid in bed because we're in the new tower, and I always thought the ghost was in the old tower. And obviously, he's got out of the old building and wanted to get a nicer room.
Yeah, he wanted nice digs.
So yeah. He's over on the new side. So I was, you know, that night in particular, because you hear their stories every time we go there, and everybody comes up with something. So I was looking at my wall to see if I could see handprints. They said they saw handprints of a kid going up the wall, and then they disappeared. You know, then they were gone. So I didn't have any incidents. I never did. But I don't drink as much vodka as they do after a game.
Tahoe Blue.
Yeah, there you go.
But what do you make of all this? Because this is, as Carmen said, this is legend. And Bryce Harper doesn't look like a guy who's going to host Saturday Night Live. Yeah. You know, he said that, you know, his door was latched. And he woke up and everything was strewn all over the room. I mean, what do you make of all this?
I don't know. I think that I think it's a good bit. And someone's messing with somebody, as has happened many times in this hotel. I know we used to go into the hotel, and Juan Lopez used to be scared of the ghost. He was our bullpen catcher. And in the old tower, they have these great chandeliers that hang down from the ceiling every 20 feet. So you get off the elevator, you get there, and you hit every chandelier, so they're swaying back and forth. So when they come off the elevator, the chandeliers are swaying, and you think it's the ghost. So I think people play a lot of tricks at this hotel because it's the thing to do, but I don't know. I haven't had any incidents myself.
Are there a lot of scaredy cats on the team, or pretty much everybody doesn't believe it?
You know, I don't know. I know because the conversation. I think there's always going to be a few, but if there's a lot, I don't know. I don't know if there's a lot, but there's a few that it's unnerving to them.
So when you open the door to your room, are you saying, "All right, let's see," or do you just walk in and not even think about it?
Well, I just walk in and not even think about it until you go to the ballpark and they show you the pictures, and then you start hearing all these stories. Then you lay in bed and you start to think about it, and then you start getting a little nervous.
Okay.
You get a little nervous.
All right. That's, as I like to say, that's baseball.
That's baseball.
That's baseball in Milwaukee. All right. Allie, question for Woe from you this morning.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as enticing as the ghosts and all that, but there was just... There was an incident the other day, and Sean Doolittle was interviewed through something, and it was essentially talking about if someone had hit a home run off of him, circled the bases, did some exuberant celebration at home plate and happened to get fined for it, that he would help pay the fine for it. It turned out that it was more in jest. It was more of a joke and stuff, but people were disappointed because they thought it was actually kind of like an excitement thing. But Doolittle was saying, no, he's not going to promise this with the way the Nationals are playing in September, things like that. But he was saying maybe sometime next year, like during Players Weekend or doing something fun like that. So, you know, it's baseball is definitely changing. Mm-hmm. And so this is just one of those types of things where how do you feel about, you know, starting to bring the, quote, fun into the game where you're to potentially betting on someone to and helping pay their fine for, you know, hitting a home run off of you?
Yeah, no, that's a tougher question than the ghost.
It took a turn real quick.
Yeah. Well, you know, a couple of things. I think, first off, I think it crosses the line if you're inviting someone to celebrate. He said it in jest,
yeah.
And I think that's the way to keep it, mm-hmm. You know, because it would be ludicrous that you'd pay someone else's fine to celebrate like that. You know, it's a serious business. There's a lot at stake. People are trying to win, you know, the fans, the organization. And I just don't think you want to cross the line in that regard. I think there's a lot of fun in the game today. I think there is already a lot of fun. You know, winning is fun. That's the most fun. And I think the celebrations obviously have come to a new level today. Years ago, there was nothing, right? And I think the fans enjoy the color of what's happening. But to find things to take it to the next level, I'm not on board with that myself. But the game's going to evolve the way it's going to evolve. But I don't know if we need to encourage those types of things. Mm-hmm. So I would say let's keep some of the traditions that we have. I'm a traditionalist, and the game keeps changing on us.
Well,
I mean, every year
it reflects society. And first of all, I agree with you. No fraternization.
Marty is all about the no fraternization.
I don't like it.
No fun.
No,
ever.
Fraternization between players on the field. I don't like it. They should never talk to each other.
He's literally waving his finger as he says this.
Yeah. Well, old man yells at cloud, part 17.
Well, there's a lot of managers and coaches and people I've played for, you know, they don't want you doing that. And when I was managing in the minor leagues, I didn't like it either. You're trying to beat the other team.
Yes.
You know, the problem today is, you know, players are from around the country and they do have friends on other teams. And, you know, we'd always say, take them to dinner, right? You'd get fined for that. And the umpires would enforce it. And honestly, when you're not playing well and the team's kicking your butt and you look over and you have half your team in the stretch of the other team, I don't think it's a good thing either. I consciously, you know, will say hello to my friends, but I will consciously not fraternize to that extent because I don't think it's appropriate. And what we're trying to accomplish. You could still say hello and be cordial, but you don't want to sit there and stretch with the guys.
Thank you very much.
Are you okay with saying hello to the
hello,
people on the other
hello.
Team? Will you say hello?
I will not say hello, and I'll tip my cap. That's as far as I'm going. It's as far as I'm going with that. A couple of things came up. We would need the professor this morning. A couple of things that I want to touch on. One was Alan Hansen got called out for that overthrow to first base. Well, I tell you honestly, I don't understand the rule. I always thought when you played, you had to make an obvious move to second base, and then they could tag you out. But I guess I'm wrong. You just have to turn the second base.
No, you're right. He made a move.
Oh, he made a move
and took a step.
He did take a step.
So, you know, everybody probably didn't see it, but we had it on replay. He did actually take a step towards second base, and that's all in the umpire's judgment. If he makes an attempt to go to second, he's vulnerable to get tagged out. And you know, when it happened, I'm not sure if he knew the rule, but the other side of it was, you know, where he kind of put himself in jeopardy is he went way too far down the line. Mm-hmm. And now when he made that step to go towards second, even if he did know the rule, which I'm not sure if he did or he didn't at the time, if he tried to get back to first, he was so far from first base. If he said, oh, shoot, I got to hustle back to first, Markakis was right there with the ball, they would have tagged him out. And so I've been in that situation. I mean, we all have. You think you're going to go, and oh, you're not, and you're so far off the base that you got to play it off. Right? You don't want anybody to know that you made the attempt, so you just start walking back to the base because you're going to be out either way. So you're hoping nobody saw you make that attempt. And and I think that's what he did at that point in time. And he was easily, you know, it would have easily been tagged out.
Okay.
So they reviewed it or they looked at it, and yeah, he made the attempt.
So there was a move. But you could turn to the left, I assume, and walk backwards.
You could turn to the left, but you want to stay away from that. You want to turn to the right when you can because you don't want the umpire to think you're making an attempt to go there. But he made kind of a quick step as if he was going. I mean, if you just stop and turn to the left and walk back, yeah, umpire's going to say, you know, he didn't attempt to go. He just turned. But he had a little bit more than just a turn.
Got it. Okay, very good. That's the professor here on Sunday morning. The other one was Gorky Hernandez made a throw behind the runner who was in between first and second. The runner went to second. I think it eventually cost you a run. I think it was a big moment in the game, I think, against the Braves. I forget. But Willie Mays used to do this all the time. He would be, you know, halfway between second and third. They throw behind him, and he would score.
Yeah.
So a lesson for Gorky's, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, you don't see a lot of it today, but these real fast base runners, they can entice a throw when you're that far in the outfield and a guy makes that big of a turn.
Yeah.
If you do throw behind him, he could walk in the second. So, you know, the best thing to do is to fake a throw and see what the runner does. You know, but in the moment, you see him off there, you want to throw behind. And if the runner has this intent, these quick guys making this big turn to entice them to throw the ball, as soon as you let it go, they walk in the second base. It's a very good base running play that you don't see very much in the game today. And it's a reminder when these things happen, you know, for all the outfielders and for everybody that, you know, you can do those things. I tell you where you see it sometimes too, the guy on second base, and this is harder to do because it's easier to execute because it's in the infield, but a guy will take a big secondary lead at second, and I've seen guys throw down to second because he was picked off, and a runner just kept going to third, and they stole third. That way, you've probably seen that play once in a while. That's difficult to do because it's such a short distance, but from the outfield, these guys could make bigger turns and try to force somebody to throw behind them. You know, you see it with the right fielder a lot, right? You throw behind him and you can continue to second. So the outfielder has to be deep in order to try to do that.
You know, it's funny you say that as you're saying it, because I see a lot of people in a ball, let's say to left center, right center, turn first and go halfway. And I know they can't get there.
Right.
Maybe they're just waiting to see what the outfielder does with the ball.
Well, you want to go as far as you possibly can to make the ball stop you. You want to expect to get to the next base. And people don't do it all the time, but you're always harping on it. Go as far as you can. Make the ball stop you. You know what I mean? Try to advance to the next base. So when the ball's on left, you can go almost halfway.
Yeah.
Now, if they throw the ball in the second base and the throw's on line, obviously you got to retreat. But if they try to throw it all the way back to first, you're so far you can walk in the second
good
base.
Good baseball. Yeah. It's good baseball. That's good baseball.
Yeah.
Very good on Sunday morning.
Some base running.
All right, very good. All right, last one here. We asked this one, and we had a lot of fun with this one last weekend. If you could live the life of any ball player, in other words, you could be so-and-so and you live that life, do you have anyone in mind that you would choose?
Well, some of the greats you think about. I mean, I'd like to be the Ghost, first off, in Milwaukee. Okay. If I could do that, that means I'd be around forever.
All right.
You know, off the top of my head, you know, you think about a guy like Derek Jeter.
That
championships is a shortstop in New York. The success they had, he was a real pro in my estimation. The way he went about it and everything that he did. So, someone like him comes to mind. You want to have a little more fun? Maybe you're Pete Rose, the Hit King.
Okay.
I respected how hard he played the game and what he did. There's so many guys. But
that's a good one. No, Derek Jeter was a very popular choice when we did that, and I was surprised.
Really?
Yes, I was surprised. And, of course, he gave away parting gifts to his dates after they let you know, right? Didn't he? Carmen, didn't that happen?
I don't know.
You don't know. Allie, come on.
I think I read something about some giveaway basket or something.
Yeah, giveaway
like
basket after a date. You would give him a giveaway.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that, and that's not why I picked him.
Oh, all right.
Him.
I just want to be clear. All right.
I was for the baseball part of it.
Sure,
I don't know.
Sure.
Very good. All right. Well, we got a good game today. Derek Rodriguez gets the ball today.
Yeah.
Sensatella, and you guys, you know, have a real chance to knock Colorado around again after they whacked you in their place.
Yeah, we've had a rough go, obviously, and we want to win today as well. We won two in a row. We want to keep this head of steam going, and Derek's pitched extremely well for us. You know, his fortune with wins is probably not where it deserves to be, so we'd like to get him another win today.
Yeah, very good. I'll see you tonight.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it, Marty. Inducted into the Jewish Hall of Fame this evening. I'll be there, and it's going to be a great night. I'm looking forward to it. What a great honor.
No, thank you. Well, you're one of the presenters, you and my friend Michael Gaines, my long-term friend, and Chris Berman will be there. Dave Fleming is coming, like Bobby Evans, and Dick Gould, and Matt Levine, and Mike Silver, so... And what
you have your crew with you here too, right?
Yes, of course. And Carmen and Allie will be there, and a number
of
other
same as Dave Fleming,
another number of other people. But I appreciate your staying back and doing this tonight and heading down to San Diego.
Oh, I wouldn't miss it. I'm looking forward to it. So enjoy today, and we'll see you this evening.
All right. Well, thanks. All right. More coming up. KMBR 680, the Sports Leader.